In the name of God, Creator, Redeemer, and Sustainer. So in our gospel passage this morning, Jesus and the disciples come to Capernaum. They come once again to Capernaum. They come to Capernaum so many times in their journey around Galilee. In fact, it goes by so quickly, sometimes we forget the importance of Capernaum, and that in fact it did exist and was a very significant community in the time of Jesus. And the reason that, one of the reasons that they come to Capernaum so often is the fact that it lies on the north side of Galilee, the Sea of Galilee. At least it did. It's only an archaeological excavation now. It was abandoned in the 11th century. It is on the northern shore of the Sea of Galilee, near the border, or really part of the border of North Israel, adjacent to Syria and the Golan Heights, which have been occupied by Israel since 1967. And near the border with Jordan is also where Capernaum was. So with all of that, there's a reverence, I think, this morning for, again, the struggles of the Middle East and the violence that is occurring not only in Gaza, but now on the northern border of Israel and in Jordan. But in Jesus' time, it was a significant town, and thus very much a place where he was in and out of often. And from Mark's gospel, we learn also that it was the likely home of Peter. As it says this morning, when they went into the house, not just any old house, but the house, it was probably the house of Peter. Capernaum is referenced 16 times across all the gospels. Only Jerusalem is mentioned more often. Healings happened there. The calling of the Gentiles heard there. Jesus called the tax collector to follow him when he was at Capernaum. Many of the parables were given when Jesus was in Capernaum. The bread of life discourse in John's gospel, that has become so familiar to us in the hymn, "I am the bread of life," that discourse was preached by Jesus in the synagogue at Capernaum. And irony of all ironies, Capernaum in Hebrew means village of comfort. Place of village of comfort. I'm sure it was a comfort in Jesus' time. And how comforted would his residence be now if he existed today, I wonder, in the middle of the territorial and political conflict of the Holy Land. But back to our gospel passage this morning. Jesus has again reminded the 12, and he had to do this fairly often because it was a hard grasp for them all, it was a hard concept to hang on to. He reminds them again that one day, and sooner than they think, he will be gone. At least his physical earthly sense will no longer be. His mission will be fulfilled, his ministry completed, and by implication, they will be on their own. And they did not really want to hear that. As a matter of fact, in the first time in Mark's gospel, Jesus says this, Peter rebukes him and refuses to listen. He doesn't want to hear about suffering and death. He doesn't want to hear that Jesus will be gone. And now in this second time, Jesus tells them it doesn't go any better. They start fighting and jockeying for leadership. If it were a political party, it would be a leadership fight. But they're not a political party. They are the seeds of the church. They will be the body of Christ, of which we are the inheritors. And in that body of Christ, and in that church, which Jesus knows full well, and the disciples will appear indeed my beloved. But it's a response to a call. Did you ever think of Jesus as the reluctant leader sometimes? Father, if it's your will, so it will be mine. Take away this cup for me that does not affect that. If I must do this, I will. I mean, many instances in the Gospels where Jesus was reluctant, but felt he had to go forward. And so Jesus intuits that they're arguing and having this great dispute about who's going to run the show when Jesus is gone. And I think if Jesus had access to James, he might have been thinking these words: those conflicts and disputes among you, where do they come from? Do they not come from your cravings that are at war within you? You want something and do not have it. You covet something and cannot obtain it. So you engage in disputes and conflicts because you do not have and because you do not ask. The question that Jesus wants them to think about is not who is the greatest and first and best, but is who is the least and last and humble. Can you all be like children? Can you be like the innocence of a little child who draws us in not from power, but draws us in from wonder and vulnerability and innocence? I was thinking a lot about this challenge of leadership, not only because we have an election coming up, as we often do, but I thought about it a lot this past Thursday at our Lunch, Laugh, and Learn program, because we were very fortunate. It took a little bit of scheduling, but I managed to pull it off. We got the mayor of Grosse Pointe Woods, Arthur Bryan, and the mayor of Harbor Woods, Valerie Kindle, together for just a nice question and answer session. And I'm inspired now to go further and look up East Point and St. Clair Shores, and we'll work our way eventually, you know, to Birmingham and Brighton. Today goes point, tomorrow the world, but I'll leave that for a little later. But we had them there, and it was delightful to hear them both speak. Answering questions, talking about projects, talking about what was going on in our several communities, talking about being accessible, from having to answer their cell phones, problems to be solved, residents spoke with praise and criticism, needing to be a servant as well as a leader. And Valerie in particular had some interesting words to share with us. She said at some point in her wonderful comments, you know, I really didn't want to be mayor. I was happy being on the council. I was very happy being on the council. And then I gather a mayor resigned, the seat had to be filled, and several of the council members asked her if she would assume that role. Reluctantly, she did. And she said, I prayed about it. I took it to God in prayer and I asked God for some leadership. Should this be what I should be doing now? And then I felt, after listening, that God wanted me to take this on. But then she also said, when you become mayor, your life changes. You get some of the good and a lot of the bad. If there's a problem, people want you to solve it. If there's a difficulty, they want you to help. And you have to be willing to answer your phone and listen. And she has provided wise and humble leadership for Harper Woods. She shared with us the story of the Eastland Mall conversion. You might have seen that in the works. And now there are two business tenants that are coming on, which will provide over 400 jobs. They started a whole effort led by Valerie to improve the pocket parks of Harper Woods, the small little half block, one block parks that are all over the place, to make them safe, to make them safe for children, to make them accessible to all people. started the planning for a new accommodation city hall community center, which they very much would like to have. But the most moving of all was her discussion with us of food insecurity at Harbor Race in particular, and her efforts to address that. She operates the food bank out of her office. She is more or less a single person food bank for those in Harbor Woods who are in need. And not only does she open up her office and collect food and allow people to bring it in, she delivers it to seniors and people who do not have access to food. After listening to her speak, I thought to myself, this is servant leadership. This is true servant leadership. Don't let Valerie's low-key demeanor fool you for one moment. She is kind, she is thoughtful, and she is helping the people of our lives. Would that all our elected leaders, all our leaders indeed, could model that kind of leadership, the kind that Jesus sets forth in the Gospels over and over and over again. Humble and servant leadership, reluctant yet called leadership, visionary but careful leadership. We have an election coming up. And I think with every election, we need to ask ourselves carefully, is this person or persons, are they really the kind of leader I want for my life and my community and my country or my neighborhood or my school board or whatever it is that is offering before us for the chance of leadership? I would make election reform par excellence. I would have printed at the top of each ballot, quote, whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all. Yeah. Hint, hint, hint. I don't think it has much chance of being approved, unfortunately.
I'm all for it.
You go, okay, there's one vote. We'll start a petition drive and begin here. But I think that's the words you should see at the top of that ballot when you are thinking about candidates. Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all. Because whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me. In the name of God, Creator, Redeemer, and Sustainer.